What if I told you that the shoes on millions of feet today, from morning joggers to Olympic champions, were born in a kitchen experiment involving a waffle iron and liquid rubber? In the late 1950s, Bill Bowerman, a stubborn Oregon track coach with calloused hands and an inventor's mind, poured urethane into his wife's waffle iron and accidentally welded it shut. That ruined appliance would eventually help birth Nike, transform American fitness culture, and redefine what it means to coach. But Bowerman's story isn't really about shoes or even running. It's about a man who refused to accept the way things had always been done, who saw potential in overlooked athletes, and who believed that innovation came from asking one simple question: what if there's a better way? His journey from Depression-era teacher to Olympic coach to accidental shoe mogul reveals how one person's obsessive tinkering can reshape an entire culture. Bowerman's story begins not with him, but with his great-grandfather, a 15-year-old who walked away from Andrew Jackson's plantation with nothing but his pony and what the family would later call a wild yearning for perfect freedom. That same restlessness drove James Washington Chambers to leave his family across the brutal Oregon Trail in 1844, eventually establishing a homestead along the John Day River after finding the rainy Willamette Valley too depressing. This wasn't just family lore. It was the DNA of defiance that would define Bill's entire life. Young Bill grew up among fierce women after his father's political career collapsed. His mother, Lizzie, a college basketball star turned single mother, earned her master's degree while raising three children alone. Bill spent summers running wild through Oregon countryside, occasionally sleeping in caves, not fleeing misery, just embracing freedom. His grandmother once caught him standing on a dinner chair with a knife during grace. "I'm gonna spear me a salmon." This wasn't rebellion. It was a boy learning rules were negotiable. When Bowerman took his first coaching job during the Depression, coaches measured toughness by how hard they hit players. Having endured this brutality under Coach Doc Spears, he stopped hitting. His practices felt like seminars where players proposed ideas. He taught proper technique, but saved full contact for games. His 1935 Black Tornado went undefeated, allowing just 20 points all season while scoring 190. Over nine seasons, his football teams went 59, 13, 8. His track teams won three state championships. The real victory was proving you could win without destroying the people you were building. Pearl Harbor changed everything. Bowerman heard the news while driving, executed an immediate U-turn, and drove straight to enlist. The 10th Mountain Division recruited America's best skiers and climbers, then broke most of them at Camp Hale's 9,500-foot elevation. Bowerman, at 32, thrived, even winning the division championship in the 440-yard dash. In Italy, his defining moment came when Ralph Lafferty took mortar shrapnel. Ignoring orders, Bowerman commandeered a jeep and drove through dangerous territory to reach medical help. "If he didn't save my life, he sure improved the odds," Lafferty said decades later. As the war ended, Bowerman bluffed a captured German general into surrendering 4,000 troops by threatening to blast you off the map. The general admitted his situation was Hoffnungslos, without hope, and capitulated. War taught Bowerman to make quick decisions, assess talent instantly, and register deaths without being destroyed. These skills would prove essential when pushing athletes to their limits. When Bowerman took over Oregon's track program in 1948, he had only two scholarships for dozens of athletes. He partnered with mill owner Harold Jones to provide weekend work, brutal jobs operating deafening machines that processed Douglas fir logs, building character while developing something revolutionary. Studying European coaches, he saw how interval training produced incredible results but destroyed athletes through staleness and injury. Between 1950 and 1952, he created his signature hard, easy method. Intense intervals only two or three times weekly, alternating with longer, steady runs and recovery days. He monitored each runner's pulse and form, sending home anyone looking tight and dull. Traditional coaches believed the more you put in, the more you get out. Bowerman believed the opposite. Stress, recover, improve. That's all training is. He trained individuals, not teams. By 1956, his method stunned the running world. Jim Bailey, a 25-year-old Australian with a broken foot considering retirement, transformed from a 4:12 miler to NCAA champion. When Bailey ran a 3:58.6 mile, the first sub-4-minute mile on American soil, all of Eugene stopped to listen. Bowerman proved that intelligence could beat brutality. Bowerman obsessed over efficiency. A miler taking 880 steps would save 55 pounds of effort by removing 1 ounce per shoe. While American shoes weighed 7 to 10 ounces, he engineered designs down to 3 ounces, creating custom fits by tracing runners' feet and building plastic lasts shaped exactly to each athlete. One recipient was Phil Knight, a decent but unremarkable runner. When Bowerman forced him to run a time trial while sick, Knight unexpectedly set a personal record, what he later called world-class shock, Nike's foundation. After graduating in 1959, Knight attended Stanford Business School, where a class assignment sparked an idea: import Japanese athletic shoes as cheaper alternatives to German brands. In 1962, he traveled to Japan and approached Onitsuka Company, claiming to represent Blue Ribbon Sports of Portland, a company that didn't exist. When samples arrived in December 1963, Knight sent pairs to Bowerman. In January 1964, they partnered, each investing $500. When Onitsuka later demanded Knight surrender major markets or accept a takeover, he secretly secured Japanese financing and placed his first order with Nippon Rubber Company. Jeff Johnson suggested the name Nike, the Greek goddess of victory. Then came the breakthrough. One Sunday morning in 1971, Bowerman poured liquid urethane into their waffle iron. After replacing Barbara's ruined iron twice, he used plaster molds to create the reverse pattern. The resulting waffle trainer became Nike's first major moneymaker, transforming a struggling import business into a cultural phenomenon. In spring 1969, Steve Prefontaine arrived at Oregon after breaking the national high school 2-mile record. Their relationship nearly exploded when Pre refused to run the 2-mile at Fresno, insisting he was a miler. Bowerman bluntly suggested he reconsider which university he'd represent. Pre stormed out, returned 15 minutes later with, "Okay, fine, got it," and won in 8:40.0. Pre's philosophy opposed traditional American distance running. He hated waiting to kick, instead leading from the front like Australia's Ron Clark. 3 days before the 1970 NCAA championships, Pre gashed his foot, requiring stitches. Bowerman orchestrated strategic theater at check-in, convincing contenders to switch events. In the final, Pre closed with 2 consecutive 60-second laps to win. After graduation, Nike hired him as its first paid athlete spokesman at $5,000 annually. In early 1975, he turned down a $200,000 professional contract to maintain Olympic eligibility. Months later, after hosting Finnish athletes, he died when his MGB flipped on Skyline Drive. He was 24. Bowerman retired in 1973 at 62, exhausted after Munich. He led Oregon Track Club's $600,000 drive to replace Hayward Field's grandstand, using laminated Douglas fir when steel bids ran too high. After Pre's death, he renamed the annual meet the Steve Prefontaine Classic and established a foundation to build Pre's Trail, 6 miles of springy cedar bark paths with exercise stations that Pre had envisioned. Nike's sales doubled yearly since 1976, hitting $270 million by 1980 and becoming America's top athletic shoe company. The 1980 IPO made Bowerman's shares worth $9 million, though his lifestyle remained unchanged. He showed Kenny Moore a printout. $1,000 invested in 1966 was now worth $750,000. Around 1980, Bowerman began losing balance and experiencing ankle weakness. The diagnosis? Toxic polyneuropathy from 23 years working with acrylamide glue and solvents in unventilated quarters. The man who gave soft, light shoes to runners worldwide could no longer run in them himself. Bill passed away peacefully on Christmas Eve 1999 at 88. Barbara found him gone after her shower and remarked, it's just like you to go on ahead and with absolutely no warning. She later discovered an unfinished letter to Phil Knight expressing deep admiration. Knight kept it in a sacred drawer, finally knowing Bowerman had judged him worthy. His legacy isn't just Nike's swoosh or the millions who jog because he wrote a pamphlet. It's the idea that innovation comes from asking, what if, when everyone else accepts good enough? It's the belief that treating people as individuals produces better results and better humans. In a world obsessed with grinding harder, Bowerman whispered a different truth. Sometimes the path to greatness runs through rest, recovery, and the courage to do things differently.